This is an intervention. Vegan burnouts are real, and I see it all around me, constantly. Stress and anxiety from the carnist around you, boyfriend, girlfriend, in-laws, mom and dad, even your own children. Constant, excruciating reminders of the violence of animal cruelty from movies, TV series, ads, your social media feed. And as an activist, which is a position we are all forced upon at some point, it is a whole other level of hell. Hearing the same well-known arguments again and again, watching painfully horrific slaughterhouse footage, saving and caring for animals despite the financial strains, and this is the least of it. Veganism is not only a fight for the animals, it is also a fight for your sanity. And in my humble opinion, one of the most powerful weapons to guard your peace of mind is meditation, the subject of today's episode. To discuss this topic, I have with me someone who has dedicated his whole life to the practice and teaching of meditation, a Buddhist monk called Bhante Sapi. In addition to his passion for meditation, Bhante is vegan and a longtime defender of the animal cause. In fact, he is the president of the organization Dharma Voices for Animals, which we covered in previous episodes. Now, Bhante has recently published a book called The Mind Workout, which is your chance to launch your meditation practice. This book is the result of decades of experience meditating, and it has the ambition to offer you the life of joy and happiness you deserve. Visit the episode notes for more details. Also, if you are experiencing immense distress, please take this episode as your cue to open up about your pain. Don't wait. Visit the episode notes and click on Find a Helpline. And of course, if you want to support my reporting of the vegan world, including the silent vegan burnout crisis, then please share this episode with your fellow vegans. How to interest people in investing in their happiness? That's the first question that came to mind, because yes, the mind workout, meditation, it's the solution, but then how to motivate people to do the meditation, to invest in their happiness? And I made a short list of behaviors I've witnessed from people. Some think that they don't deserve to be happy. There's a lot of guilt around. Some think they are cursed. I've heard that a lot from people. You know, it's just the way my life is. My life is a tragedy, and they kind of normalized the pain. Some are addicted to their pain, and the obvious example is anger. With anger, you know, there's this rush of adrenaline, and it's an intense emotion. So I've seen lots of people, you know, being addicted to that anger. And maybe one last, for some, this pain becomes an identity. And, you know, it's often even tied to your cultural identity. Like I was thinking of the different cliche we hear about Irish families or things like that, you know, the addiction to alcohol and the hurtful comments from the family. Like, it's again, maybe it ties back to the normalization of that pain. But so, you know, what do you make of all of that?
Well, first of all, if we look at what is happiness is, happiness is the reaction. Happiness and unhappiness both are reactions. There we choose to have a reaction of happiness and we are trying to avoid the reaction of unhappiness. And to be happy, what do? We are trying to bring something to make us happy. Now, therefore, we want outside world to make us happy, our family to make us happy. And people buy house. They think then they'll be happy by having a new house. But unfortunately, that excitement will last, will not last longer. So once when you get family with it, then you need something else to bring happiness because you cannot be excited any longer. But wise people, when somebody is wise, that person is looking for internal happiness. Internal happiness is actually beyond happiness, which is come from wisdom. But you don't have to be wise to be happy with materialistic things. That's easy happiness people are looking for. Even animals can be happy with the same situations. So therefore, we are trying to make us happy by providing something, but unfortunately, that happiness does not long la last longer. That's the reality of happiness. Now, then you asked a different question, like about habits and addictions and all of those. That's about our emotional behaviors and our lifestyles. Everything we do can create a habit. Like waking up early morning, or we have a lot of habits. The lifestyle we follow with the habit, even the food you eat, it's a habit, and so many things. But it is not really who we are because that's what we have trained to ourselves. And yes, you can be addicted to your emotions, and you can be addicted to your feelings. What happened? Addiction means you seek it. Your physical body is looking for it. And then you get addicted to that. Like anger can be a good addiction, frustration, even fear, even anxiety. Because when it becomes addiction, because your body is seeking that hormones, and hormone produced by your body, but it's influenced by your mind. Therefore, if you have a friendly mind, that friendly mind influences your body to have or produce friendly chemicals. If you have an unfriendly mind, then unfriendly mind will influence your body to have unfriendly chemical. When people have stressful time, that stressful time create painful body. Your shoulder get shoulder aches and back aches and all of those things. But if you are happy, you don't get a shoulder aches. You will not call, "Oh, I'm so happy right now. That's why now my back is tight or my shoulder is tight because I'm happy." No, you don't say that. Your back get tight and your shoulder get tight because you are unhappy, you are tired, and you are stressful. But what we forget is our mind influence our body to create, I mean, produce certain hormones or some chemicals, which can be either friendly or unfriendly. Even though we look for friendly chemicals, and you don't have a choice. Whatever the reactions you have, create it by itself. That's the situation. Going back to the original question, happiness is the reaction.
I like the way you describe the mind as being friendly or not, because I often feel this way that looking at people and looking at myself, that and you do mention it in the book, that you know, sometimes your worst enemy is yourself. You're sabotaging mm-hmm. yourself, you're haunting yourself, you're just hurting yourself. And I guess the real challenge is how to befriend yourself, to make an ally out of yourself. Is that a good way to summarize, to define meditation?
Well, the summarized meditation is the title of the book, The Mind Workout. Now, if somebody asks, what is mind? Then I would say, everybody have a mind, but it is your mind, not somebody else's mind. You are responsible for your own mind. And if you have a friendly and happy mind, that's what you have created with yourself. But if you have unfriendly mind, that unfriendly mind lead you to be unfriendly person. What this workout is doing, workout means, you know, think about the physical workout. With the physical workout, you actually, so I have mentioned that in the book. And in the physical workout, you shape your body and you keep your body healthy. And the same way, when you don't do workout, if you're just consuming food, what happened? And you know, you will become a very unhealthy person. Only if you look for tasty food or the junk food makes your body unhealthy. What we are looking for, our mind, we look for junk food. And you are trying to bring satisfaction through easy ways. We are trying to consume that more and more, because we will never fully satisfied ever with any experience in our life. We are looking a pleasure to feed us or support our mind to be satisfied. Do you know anybody who would say, now I am completely happy with my life, I don't need anything else or anymore? No. If somebody say, I am happy, that person is looking more and more that same happiness. And if you happen to be a good restaurant, where say, oh, so meal is wonderful, then next time you want to come to the next same restaurant because it was nice last time. Then you compare with that day. Oh, maybe it's not good last time. Or you would say this time is better. And what's happened, so satisfaction does not last longer. So that's what we call as a happiness. Now, mind is not a physical thing, but mind is you. Your nature is your mind. If somebody asks you, who are you, then you are your mind, not your body. Because your bodies keep changing. It's not yours. The good example is, as soon as, now think about anything on your body, which you call it yours as long as it is attached to your body. As soon as your hair disconnects from your body, it becomes garbage. You don't like it. As long as even your fingernails disconnect to your body, it's become yucky or it's become garbage. Even the piece of skin, it becomes an ugly thing. As long as it is attached to your body, you claim it as yours. What about your mind? We have memories. Where does memory exist? It's in your mind. All the behaviors, the nature, the quality. When you say you love somebody, who you love? For that body or for the person inside the body? The qualities that person have, the things that person has done. So when you call you love somebody, do you love that somebody's mind? Therefore, without saying that word, we are associating with the mind. But we do not know how to make ourselves better or healthier or stronger. The mind workout offers so many ways and tools to know yourself, know your mind, and find the person who you want to be with you.
Yes, I think the title of the book is genius. I think that, when you say meditation, people already have so many attached ideas of what it is. But if you say the mind workout, quickly they know what you're talking about, making your mind healthier, like you would do with the body, and having a discipline and investing in that discipline. For the people listening and hearing you talk about meditation and the mind and all of that, they might think, is this, do I need to be a Buddhist to adopt those practices, to adopt this perspective on life? Is this, compatible with my way of life or my religion or my way of interacting with the world? What do you make of that? Do you need to be Buddhist to meditate, basically?
Thank you for the question. So now, first of all, let's find out what's the meaning of being Buddhist. Now, being Buddhist means somebody who's practicing to become more wise. And you do not a follower of somebody else, even for Buddha. You are not a follower, but you are continuously helping you to improve yourself with your qualities. That's the meaning of being Buddhist, one who's seeking wisdom. That's a clear direct translation of the meaning of the Buddhist, being Buddhist. In that way, you can have another religion, at same time you can be Buddhist, as long as you are seeking wisdom, as long as you are reflecting yourself and improving yourself, you are being Buddhist. So, who can practice meditation? Any human being can practice meditation. And anybody who practices meditation will have same result, will have same benefit of practicing meditation. Meditation is not belong to any religion or any philosophy, but meditation is subject to everybody who has a mind. So therefore, anybody can practice meditation regardless what's the culture, what's religion. Yes.
That was my next question. What are the benefits of meditation? What is the carrot here, and why should we consider it?
Well, there are a few things, and I will start from the very beginning. Meditation helps you to cultivate or develop your awareness of present moment, present experience. That gives you clarity. And also, when you practice more meditation, that helps you to have self-reflection. You are learning to reflect yourself or seeing yourself from outside of you in a different way that helps you to get to know yourself more. As a meditator, anybody become a happier person, permanent happy person, and well-satisfied person, and somebody would have a clear understanding about him or herself by knowing who I am or who that person is. By knowing you, you would know easily what other people are doing, and you will get to know others better too. So ultimately, the meditator can be healthier with their mind, happier, and their actions and their behavior will be very friendly and likable by others. And most people find that they can sleep well. Even you can die happily, live longer, live healthier. So many benefits are there. So therefore, there are so many avenues even people coming into meditation, those who look for those avenues. In our classes, so I lead meditation classes, weekly classes, and tomorrow I started another retreat. I'm conducting retreats. Those people who come to those classes or retreats, they are not traditionally Buddhist. But I would say they are open thinkers. They are brave because they are willing to see themselves. Then they take time to come and practice meditation. I see a lot of aha moments in people's life by knowing themselves, by seeing themselves through the practice. So, and also I would say to practice meditation or have a retreat, you have to be a committed person, committed to yourself, committed for well-beingness of yourself. But if you are a good person, a happy person, and joyful person, that is what you have to share with others. If you love your family, then practice meditation. Because then they will have a good person to work with. But if you are unhappy or difficult person to deal with, then that's the person your family has to deal with. And let me tell you, since you asked this question, another example. Several years ago, I went to a pharmacy with another friend. Then a young girl walked into me and asked me, "Are you the Bhante?" I said, "Yeah, do you know me?" And then she said, "Well, I have seen your pictures. That's how I recognized you. I was looking to see you one day and to thank you for to give us giving us a good better mother." Then I got confused. I said, "What are you talking about? Tell me more." She said, her mother is coming to one of my weekly meditation class. Now she and her sister like her mother very much because in about 6 months and she's a very happy person, joyful mother, and they are having a wonderful time with the mother. And they think the meditation is really helping mother to be a good listener and good supportive mother. And she said, "We wake up her Saturday morning to go to meditation class because we want her to meditate." And then she said, "By the way, can I ask you to come to my birthday party? Because I want to introduce meditation to my friends also. If you can, that would be wonderful." Then I went to her birthday party, and she said to her friends, "This is my birthday gift to all of you, and having a and leading a meditation session by this teacher." Then I did a session for them. So now this is what is behind this. Family have seen the difference in this mother. This is not only story I know. There are so many stories I have heard like this. So without you knowing, you would be likable and happier and beneficial person for you and others once when you become a meditator.
And I won't try to be some kind of objective interviewer here. I completely agree with your assessment of, meditation, and I've experienced those benefits in my everyday life from my meditation practice. From hearing you talk, I remembered a few years back, I think 2 or 3 years ago, I had a toothache. And there was no painkiller available, or it was not working well. And I decided to meditate to attenuate the pain. And it helped. It really did. Like it was some kind of magic. And so it became an important tool in my toolbox, meditation, whether it is, to focus before a meeting or reduce the stress from an event or travels, or like you said, helping with sleep. So yeah, very useful tool to have. So I want to tackle the number one thing I hear when I suggest meditation, which is, this is not for me, I can't do it, I can't focus. And you spend a great deal of time, in the book right away to address this issue. Because often when I talk to people and try to understand why they think it's not for them, they give me a bad description of meditation, not what I would call meditation. What they call meditation is they try to willfully stop thinking. And they think that if they can't stop their thinking, then, they're not relaxing well, and it just increases their, stress. And it's just, so that's, the wrong way of thinking about, understanding meditation. But I guess you've had that a lot, people telling you meditation is not for me, I'm not made to meditate. Let's address it directly.
Okay. So if somebody can meditate well, that person does not have to meditate, because that person can do that. So the reason we are practicing meditation is because we cannot meditate. We don't have a calm mind. That's why we are practicing. But what is this practice is doing? Does this practice helping you to recognize the struggles you have and are helping you to understand the nature of mind you have? And as a result of it, you would know how to improve your mind and how to help your mind to be calm and get to know your mind, So therefore, answer is, that is the very reason we are practicing meditation. I often find people say, oh, no, I can't sit down right now because I can't sit on the floor. And if I tell you, often when I have new meditators come into our classes, right away they start sitting on the chair. I give them a hard time. If they are young people and if I feel like I'm comfortable of giving them a hard time, I give them a hard time. I said, how come you're sitting on the chair? Why don't you try the cushion? Oh, I can't sit on the cushion. How do you know? Said, why don't you try it? And sometimes some people are really surprised afterward. People say, I can meditate. Well, I often remind people, our meditators, there's no thoughtless or painless meditation. You are training your mind. And also, when somebody have a unsettled body. Unsettled body means unsettled mind, not the other way around. When your mind settled, your body also gets settled. So therefore, training your mind and training your body happens at the same time. So to have good meditation, you have to have determination and you have to be committed to practice. With the commitment and determination, this is something you can do. It is doable.
Yeah, going back to that short list I mentioned in the beginning of our conversation, some people think happiness is not for them, that they can't reach it, that it's an impossibility, it's kind of a form of despair. So in the subtitle of your book, you wrote, for a lifetime of happiness. Is that promise really golden? Is it really a real promise we can make to people if they practice meditation?
Definitely. if they are committed to meditation practice, they can see how their happiness level is deepening and settling with happiness. And also, they will realize that nobody else can take their happiness away. It is their happiness. I have seen meditators, and I have seen many practitioners who has experienced that.
Well, the reason you're here on a podcast about veganism is because there is a lot of suffering in the animal rights world space. Whether you are a rescuer or a lawyer, I remember one of my guests was a lawyer, and I never thought of being a lawyer in the world of animal rights as being somewhat painful. But then he told me I can spend days looking through footage of animals being tortured, and it's something, it's a very hurtful experience. Can meditation be a tool to address those painful experiences? And why should we, put the emphasis on investing in your happiness in the animal rights space?
So, as I mentioned earlier, one of the benefit of having meditation is you are gaining wisdom. With the wisdom, you realize what is in your capacity and what is not in your capacity. What is in your range, what is not in your range. So we cannot change anything beyond our capacity or our range. And we cannot be responsible of things that you are not responsible. That clarity you will have through mindfulness and wisdom that you gain through meditation. When you have that wisdom and you know what you can do, so then you will not have anger because you know those people who's hurting animals, they are not wise. They only know what they know, that it is their capacity. As example, let me bring you example from animal world. We know that tortoise cannot run like horse. But if you expect tortoise to run like a horse, it is your misunderstanding. Just being an animal, still tortoise is being a tortoise. And in the human realm, there are so many people in the world, but they have a different capacities. Some people have a lot of compassion, some people does not. Some people have a lot of ignorance. Self-centered people are there and selfless people are there. Some people are very generous, some people are not. So with these differences, if you expect somebody to perform beyond that person's capacity, then we are living in the unrealistic world. It is not a realistic thing. Having that wisdom, you will not become angry because you know your anger cannot do anything. I always tell animal welfare, the people in animal welfare field, do your best, but don't become an ugly or angry animal activist because as an ugly or as an angry animal activist, you cannot convince or you cannot help others to understand what you do. Because you need friendly, you need a friend to speak and invite you to get into their side. It is like somebody who's waiting on the other side of the river and you're asking, hey, come to this side. If you are invited by somebody who's angry and ugly and is screaming at you and so frustrated and blaming you, cursing you, you will never go to that side, even though you are living in the danger. Because you think, why do I go to another place which is dangerous for me? But if you have a very friendly and kind and compassionate person inviting you to come to that side, then you will, without thinking twice, you will go there. That's the person you want to be as animal activist. You understanding other person's ignorance, understanding other person's weakness, understanding other person's behavior, you need to invite that person and help that person out to become a better, clear person. That's the job I think animal activists can do more effectively. So therefore, I always encourage that. But to become that person, it is good to have good meditation practice. I always encourage animal activists to introduce meditation, mindful practice. That way they can be a better activist.
And in the first steps of meditation, you talk about the analogy of the mirror and how you are reflected, and you see your reflection, and you write about this story of a merchant that has this magical mirror that reflects, your inner self, and how many people are frightened by what they see. We talked about how some people are hesitant to get into meditation, but there are also people who get into meditation, and then, just like the story goes, they get frightened by what they see, and run away. And personal story of mine, I went to this meditation retreat, spent the first day and night there, and then after that, I was talking to one of the monks there. And he said, most people leave before, the second day. Like they don't even last the night. Why? Because their mind becomes a burden. And I did experience some of that, at first in meditation retreats. It's like the best analogy I ever heard is it's like turning on multiple radios and having all of those voices in your head. It's a lot of noise. So, how do you, what's the solution to that problem?
Well, now the question is, the person who's living, does that person need a solution? That person does not see the trouble for solution. Because if you will look for solution if you see there's a trouble or there's a challenge, there's a question, then you need a solution. What is happening to us, we get familiar with ourselves, regardless you are happy or unhappy, you are living the pain or not. You want to maintain as who you are. There's a Sufi story came to my head. I know this is a fiction story, but there's a very, very wonderful message in it. An angel appeared in this particular village, and then called everybody, and then said, "I'm here because I see you all have a lot of pain you are carrying. Tomorrow morning, just come to a city ground with all of your pain and trouble, put into one bag and carry that bag with you." Now, then everybody thought, okay, today is the way we would know how to get rid of my pain, my trouble, my challenge, and everybody came with it. And he said, okay, now since you all have it, and just leave that everything in that just underneath the big tree, and then just come with me. Then this angel just walk away from the tree about a mile distance, and then said, okay, now But this is the thing, you can't really leave your bag there. You go back and carry, you have to carry something, then you can pick somebody else and less heavier bag. Now everybody ran to pick a bag. Not a smaller, not something better, yeah, their own bag, because they don't want somebody else to take their bag. Before somebody else take their own bag, they want to go and pick up their own bag again. Why? That's a pain they are familiar. Those pains associate or identifying as who they are. They used to experience that pain. We don't want it. What is happening to meditators who come to meditation retreat first time? They do not want to look at themselves. Simply, they want somebody else to come and fi fix them, but they don't want someone to take away who they are, even. So, and we are scared to see ourselves. We don't want to look at ourselves. You have to be a brave person to look at yourself. Without that determination, without being that much brave, then you don't want to. Then you are running away from it. That's why meditation is not for everybody. Meditation is for those who's being committed and who's seeking wisdom. For those people, meditation will work.
I do think the world would be a better place if everyone was meditating. And, in my, in the small niche of the world that is animal rights, movement, I would like to see more activists get into meditation because I do believe, like you mentioned before, if they became meditators and, they showed this, they saw clearly who they are and how their actions impact the world. I think they would become more efficient activists, more productive activists, more mindful activists, and maybe make more progress for the animal cause. Would you agree with that assessment?
Definitely, I'm completely agree with you. Even I myself have tried to encourage some all this conference and who's having conferences for animal activists by introducing meditation in that scale of the bigger scale. And but I haven't seen yet they are accepting my proposal. Because most of the time people are looking for academical way of approach, not the practical way of approach. And because everybody think that they know themselves, but you have to meditate to see that you know little about yourself. And I would highly encourage activists to practice meditation, and that way you can help this world to be a better world.
I need to mention something else. You start your book again with thanking your parents, and you talked about how, meditation is about the wisdom you gain and then apply in your everyday life. The relationship you have with your parents needs to be very, it needs to, you need to really be mindful of that and take care of it. That's something I learned, in the beginning of my practice, and how it is important, in terms of impacting your mental health and your everyday life. And I'm always saddened to see how many vegans are feel alienated from their family, including their parents, because they don't share, their worldview on animals, and they don't want to sit on at the dinner table if there's, animal products on the table. What do you make of that relationship in one's life and its importance and its impact on happiness, on our happiness?
You know, meditation practice is a journey. In that journey, first you will learn how to love yourself. And also in that process of loving yourself, you would know that you are not perfect. And also you then that will help you to learn how to treat others the way how you want to be treated. That's a very important point. To treat others the way how you want to be treated. Then you are becoming an honest person. You will not give others what you don't want. So if you have become, when you become that person, you don't want to see that animal flesh is waiting and placing on your table. Why? You don't want anyone else to eat your body. I remember one time, one of the young boy, about 14, 15 years old, and I met this young boy in front of his grandmother's nursing home. And so he was waiting outside, and then as I was coming outside, and he asked me, "Oh, I heard you are vegan. Is that true?" I said, "Yes, I am vegan. How do you know?" "Well, I am vegetarian." Then I was very curious. I asked him, "How come? Why do you vegetarian?" And he said, "Well, it's a wrong question. I know I shouldn't ask that question, but out of curiosity, I asked him why did you become vegetarian?" And he said, "Well, I don't want anyone to eat me. Then why do I eat somebody else's body?" This young boy, 15 years old, I thought he's so wise. And I said, "Did somebody teach you that?" Or no. I understood that now. I don't eat. My parent doesn't like it, but I don't, because I don't want anyone else to eat me for their food. If I don't like it, why do I eat somebody else's body for my food? You don't have to be a huge academic person to come into that understanding. You don't need any religion to tell you that. You have to be an honest person. With meditation practice, you become that honest person. You become the person you want to be. Then you make the decision. You make the call in your life. So that is what awareness is doing. That is what mindfulness is doing. You become the person you want to be. Once you become that person, you cannot harm directly or indirectly any other living beings. Eating animal flesh means you are indirectly harming other living beings. Because you don't get animal flesh from a tree. You have to kill somebody. And another person recently told me, "I am not a thief to steal others' life for my own food." Yeah, simply you steal. You say, "Hey, I'm hungry, then I'm going to eat you." Nobody's offering their body willingly to you to eat. So you don't have to be a Buddhist to understand that. Even you don't have to be a meditator to understand that. Only you have to be an honest person to understand that. And same time, meditation is helping you to be more aware of the real world.
Another topic you tackle in the book is jealousy. And that is something this animal rights movement is not immune of. What is jealousy exactly? And how do we fight it? And I guess, how do we use meditation to fight it? Because I don't see, you know, any version of a successful movement or activist movement having, you know, a culture of jealousy. And inner competition. You know, something that inspires me in life is to hear stories about startups. And, you know, if you learn about the startup culture in Silicon Valley or, you know, some other places, entrepreneurs share ideas freely. They don't entertain those feelings of jealousy. They are in a mentality of cooperation, and that makes them incredibly successful. And so I do think it's a big problem for social movements. And I was really glad to see that being, you know, talked about. I also, you know, one last point about jealousy. I also think it's a fire that is fueled a lot by social media. And sadly, I'm against it, but, you know, the reality is most of this vegan movement and animal rights movement is present on social media. All about social media actions and connecting with others through social media. And social media, well, it feeds that jealousy. It feeds those negative feelings. So, yes, please talk to us about jealousy.
Yeah, there are two reasons behind it for animal welfare field. Number one is limited resources and limited financial support. And when that limitations are there, animal welfare people want, the groups want funders to fund them, not others. Because everybody is carrying good visions. Everybody is going to do a good job. But even though others are doing a good job, you also want to do a good job. That's why you want others to help you, not others. You want funders, donors to support you, not others. Because it is limited resources, limited funders and limited donors. And that create a jealousy. And another part is some people are not willing to accept the goodness what other people have or what others do. As you said, in that when somebody does not have any challenge, they don't have jealousy because they don't have any challenge. And nobody can take what they have. And I have even seen that among the meditation teachers too. So somebody asked me recently, and they have seen that with other teachers, but they don't see that with me, and why? I was not thinking about that in the past, and then right away I said, well, nobody can replace me. It's me. And that is not only my story, it's with everybody. Nobody can replace you as long as you can become who you are. But you are in trouble if you try to be somebody else. As long as you are finding yourself, you are being you, no one can replace you. Then you don't have to be jealous with somebody else. Because no one can replace you. And no one can replace any organization too. Because if that organization becomes unique with the people in the organization. And then when the donors look at that organization, they will stick with that organization with honesty. So therefore, all of us are unique. When they realize that, they will not have fear. With fear, you experience jealousy.
There is also the fact of, and I thought it was a funny insight that you brought to this conversation, how, you know, you said they're thinking about the issue as an academic instead of a realist. And I thought, yeah, those academic people are completely detached from reality sometimes, you know, hearing them talk. And Also, they come from a very competitive culture and petty culture of like whose name is on that study or that paper and who is the the biggest teacher with the more the more incredible titles and so on. It is a an anti-startup cooperation culture. It's really a culture that breeds jealousy. I guess my last question is less of a question and maybe more of a request. Do you want to maybe give instructions for a meditation? And maybe we could leave, things at that with you giving those instructions, and the person listening to the podcast could maybe close their eyes and, try meditation, and learn that from you, practically, talking about, practicing and not being just theoretical about it. Let's give a chance for the listener to experience that meditation.
Well, yeah, one thing I would say to practice good meditation, you have to come to the good posture. The good posture would be you sit down with the, either in Sanskrit we call it the Sukha Asana, which is easy posture. You can search that, how it looks like. That's most easiest one, which means folding your legs and all the knees go down and big. And make your back is straight. So your legs might go to sleep sometime. Don't worry. That's the purpose of that posture. And once you settle with your body, the starting meditation would be the breathing meditation. I will guide you with the podcast, and then anybody can follow it. And also, I would say at least try to meditate at least 20 minutes. But if you can do 40, that would be great. Then if you have a consistent practice, that will help you to improve yourself, find a quiet space and committed to that time, and keep your pets and kids away because they don't know you're meditating, then they'll be disturbed. Also, these days, make sure you turn off your phone or make phone silent. And then once you're ready, you can sit with a straightened back and close your eyes. So I will guide you with meditation, and you can practice with me. And but I will start, and then you can continue till the end. So and okay. Now sit on the cushion or wherever you are. Gently. Close your eyes. Feel how you have placed your body. Allow you to be relaxed. Allow you to be here at present moment. Feel your breath, your present breath. Select a place to observe your breath. It can be your upper lip or tip of the nose, inside the nose, your chest. Or your stomach. Select a place. Now keep your attention there. Allow your body to breathe naturally. Observe your present breath. Breathe in mindfully, breathe out mindfully. When your mind wanders, notice it. Gently and mindfully, bring your attention back onto present breath. Observe this breath. Remember, you are not a reactor. You are an observer. Observe your present breath. Take a deep breath. Let your body relax. Let's cultivate these intentions in your heart. May all living beings be well, happy, skillful, and peaceful, including you, your family, your friends, people you know and you do not know, pets, animals, visible and invisible beings. May all living beings be well, happy, skillful, and peaceful. Let it cultivate freely in your heart. Let it become you, who's being a friend, friendly to all living beings. When you are ready, you can open your eyes mindfully.